And you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Justice Havigan, members of the court, and may it please the court and Mr. Schartz. This case, they say, you know, timing is everything, but it's not, in this case, it's not the only thing as well. This case arose out of the County Court of Douglas County, in which the trustee of the Sheila Foxley Radford Trust requested instructions from the county court as to what to do about a note that my client, Maria Radford, had written when she received a gift from her mother in 2007.
Counsel, I'd like to get a fact clear in my mind. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a pour-over will into a trust, correct?
Well, there was a pour-over will, yes.
Was there sufficient property in the pour-over will to fund, that went via the pour-over will to the trust, to fund the entire property that would is claimed to have been?
Well, my understanding is that the property was in the trust already. I'm not sure what effect the pour-over will had in funding the trust.
Is that in our record?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But that was my understanding, was that according to the terms of the trust and the transcript, the decedent had transferred, according to the terms of the trust, all of her property into the trust.
Well, let's assume a situation where you have a pre-existing trust with a dollar, and the pour-over will pours over everything.
Okay.
In that situation, wouldn't it be clear that the redemption statute does apply?
No, because you're still the document that's passing the property to the beneficiary. The beneficiaries of the trust are receiving it, not the devisees in the will. I mean, they
marry each other. The trustees are receiving legal title,
right.
But it's the equitable beneficiaries of the trust who are the true beneficiaries of the estate, right?
Well, again, once we're talking about the interpretation of a trust, in the terms of the trust, even if it was funded by a will, the terms of the trust are what apply and determine who the devisees are and who the qualified beneficiaries
are. So are you taking the position that as a matter of law, the Chapter 30, Article 23 statute does not apply where a trust, even the beneficiary of a pour-over will, is involved?
Yes. The Uniform Trust Code governs the interpretation of trusts and the administration of trusts. And that's how this case came to be.
But doesn't the probate code control what is transferred to the trust? If it passes by way of the pour-over will.
The probate code would apply in that case, yes.
So do we know in this case whether it applies or not? Does our record tell us?
I'm not sure. But the only thing that I know is that in the transcript, when the trustee asked the court for instruction, she was asking for, say, I have this property in the trust.
But how it got there,
I need instruction on how to distribute it.
How it got there, we don't know.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
And so, as I said, timing is everything in this case. And at the time that Sheila restated her trust, the Uniform Trust Code had been adopted by the state of Nebraska. That became operative in 2005, and the trust in this case was restated 5 years after that in 2010.
Do we have in our record what was in existence before 2010?
I believe it is in the transcript. There is a reference to the original trust. It was part of the pleadings, and it's in the court transcript. I believe that was 1996, that trust was established, and then in 2010 she restates the trust.
But that's not in the Bill of Exceptions, is it?
It's not in the Bill of Exceptions.
So it's not evidence?
No.
All right.
So, again, timing is, like I said, the Our position is that the redemption statute doesn't apply for a number of reasons. One, the timing of the gift. The gift was made in 2007, and the trust and the Pour Over Will were not created until 3 years later. And so it's our position that the that bequest or that whether it's in a Pour Over Will or in a trust as a beneficiary, she cannot create a redemption for something that, for a device that doesn't exist yet.
Is there some presumption that if the will or whatever comes later, that the earlier gift or the earlier transfer was taken into consideration?
Well, I think it's implied in the statute because when the redemption statute refers to a devisee as the one who creates the redemption, in that case, you can't be a devisee until there's a provision for you in the document. So I think the implication is in the statute that the document or the device or the provision in a trust for the beneficiary has to exist.
What was the rationale of the trial court that this was an advanced redemption?
Well, she looked at the, in her order, she looked specifically at the language of the note that Mary wrote, which said, Mom gave me $200,000 and I recognize this note as inheritance. Or I recognize the gift as inheritance. That was the sole language in the note, and that was the language she relied on.
What was the analysis of the trial court?
Well, I think she just said, this is what Mary wrote, and this is why, and because of what she wrote, it's an redemption.
Didn't she apply the statute which discusses a contemporaneous writing of the Doni?
Well, correct. She discussed the statute, but in as far as her analysis of what qualified as an redemption, she looked at the language of the note itself.
Compared to the statute that says a written notice from the donee contemporaneous with the gift.
Correct.
That was the analysis, is that correct?
That's correct.
If the will had simply said, I devise this, all my property to same people in the same shares as the trust ultimately provided for. And if all the property passed under the will, there would be no question but what this would be an redemption, would there?
I would still disagree because the document that's from which they are receiving, even though the trust may have been funded by a will, I still think...
Well, I'm taking the trust. In the hypothetical world.
Okay.
In the hypothetical world, if this were the money passed under a will, same people, same writing, there's no question it would be an redemption,
then,
right?
Then they'd be receiving through the will.
Yes.
And does it matter that the will predates the gift or postdates the gift?
Well, I think it matters that the document postdates the gift because of the language of the redemption statute, which refers, says only a devisee can, in that third...
So if you're not a devisee before the gift,
right,
then the statute has no implication.
That's correct.
But aren't you an intestate beneficiary or
Then the statute that applies to intestacy, there is a provision similar to this in the intestacy statute, but there requires a clear writing that that it's in satisfaction of the gift.
The probate code definition of devisee, I don't recall it off the top of my head. Does it speak to equitable beneficiaries? Assume that it does, just for purposes of argument. What does that do to this?
If the redemption statute refers to equitable...
No, the in 30-22, whatever, 01, wherever it is in there, where there's a definition of devisee, and assume it includes equitable beneficiaries.
Well, if that definition was in there, which I don't think it is, but if it was in there, yeah, that might drag this into the probate code.
So it may depend on what the definition of devisee is.
Right.
And nobody's briefed that, have they?
No.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Is my time up?
I believe that it is.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Schartz, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. My name is Rob Schartz, and with Tyler Johnson of my firm, Abrahams Caslow in Omaha, we represent Bridget Radford in this matter. clearly, our position is that a trust that is part of a comprehensive estate plan should receive and have afforded the benefits of the statute that we're talking about, the Redemption by Satisfaction Statute 30-2350. The will is nothing in this case, Your Honors. All it says is give all of my residue over to my trust. I've established a trust. Now, there's been a lot of argument here, and you know, the first words out of appellant's mouth is timing is everything. Well, what seems to be lost here is that the fact that Sheila Radford had a trust and a will back in 1996. She changed it a couple of times over the years. That's evidence. And
is that in our record?
It is. And Justice Gavel, you had asked that. It is in the Bill of Exceptions under a memorandum of stipulated facts. There's numerous documents that are in there, and one of the documents is the original trust from 1996. There's also scribbled notes on there where she had suggested changes over the years. Then there's also a letter in there from her attorney indicating previously, in I think about 2004, that she had changed it a couple of times over the years. So the facts are that her sister came into contact with Provident Trust Company, liked them, and Sheila wanted to move her trust over to Provident. That's what started this ball all rolling. She went to Ann Burnett. Ann Burnett drafted the trust. Ann Burnett represents Provident Trust Company in this matter. And at the end of the day, what ends up happening is at the time that this note was written, at the time that there was a need by a child for $200,000 to secure her house, because basically she was going to lose her house. She was in a rental situation. The landlord, so to speak, out in California, I believe, was saying, we're going to sell a house. If you want to buy it, you can buy it. And she needed the money. She went to her mom. She asked her for $200,000. She wrote out this note. Mary wrote out this note. And the note is clear. The note is unequivocal. This letter acknowledges that Sheila Radford, also known as quote-unquote mom, is affording me $200,000 for purchase of a home and is recognized by me, Mary, as inheritance. Then she even goes on to say, I sign here recognizing that this is true. She says it twice. She acknowledges that it's inheritance twice.
Does she say it's in satisfaction of anything?
She doesn't say it's in satisfaction. It's not a loan. It's a gift.
Does the statute require that the writing say that it is in satisfaction, or is your argument that that's encompassed within the word inheritance?
I think it's encompassed in the word inheritance, and these are lay people. This case, as you know, has been up before you before, and there was focus on the fact that a lay person wrote this. I don't think that matters. These people did not. Sheila Radford, I would attest to you, did not know what the word redemption meant. I'll almost guarantee you, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I'll guarantee you that Mary Radford didn't know what redemption meant. But the fact is that when Mary got this $200,000, there was clear evidence that it was going to come off of her end-of-the-day inheritance from her mother. Now, what's not in the record, and nobody has talked about, and nobody has ever come up with any evidence on, and I don't know that it exists, is in 07, when she gave her this $200,000, I don't know how much money Sheila Radford had. When Sheila Radford changed her trust in 2010, I don't know how much money Sheila Radford had. So this notion in appellant's argument that, well, surely she wouldn't have changed it to exclude her daughter by giving her 1/6 and then knowing that this essential document, $200,000 IOU from Mary to the estate or to the trust, is out there. Well, why would Sheila do that? She basically wrote her daughter out. We don't know what the estate assets, we don't know what the trust assets were at that point in time, and there's no evidence whatsoever that either one of these parties ever went to go get that document and shred it, tear it up. Sheila could have written on this document, no longer in effect, I waive it, I void it, anything.
She could have written in the trust terms as well that I've already given Mary $200,000 and right?
And so she could have, and absent the fact that she had this document at home, she saved it. It was in her important papers. There's no relevance with regards to, you know, referencing in Henry Hope's, whether it was in a box or not. This was a small box that she kept some of her financial documents in. The rest of them were all set in a cabinet, a file cabinet that was in her pantry. That's where this note was found.
Structurally within the trust, is there an election provision?
I don't believe that there is.
So, for example, I elect to give kid number one this designated asset, right? And therefore, that kid gets that much value less at the distribution.
No.
Not a designated asset.
No. And essentially what the trust says is half to Bridget and one-sixth. The other half is divided between the other three children.
So this is not an election pursuant to a term in an existing trust?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. That was a reduced share for the appellant, wasn't it? From the original to the amended, she received a reduced share?
Her and her two siblings, both of the other two siblings, Christopher and William, both went from basically everybody sharing and sharing alike, so they went from 25% down to one-sixth, each of them.
Is there anything in the record that will show intent? That was Sheila's intent to the $200,000 was the reason for her reducing her share?
No, there's no direct link between her giving prior gift to Mary, reducing her share, and I don't know how that would really affect or why that should affect Christopher and William also, because their shares went down. For whatever reason Sheila did what she did, she elected to have Bridget get half of it and the other kids share the other half. And the interesting thing here is There's a lot more testimony, obviously, on the second round when this court sent it back down to get more evidence. And one of the interesting back and forth was testimony with regards to a dinner that the family members, that Christopher, his wife, and then Mary and her son had after Sheila had passed away and they had the funeral. And Christopher's testimony is that Mary made the comment that, well, I'm probably not going to get anything or I'm not going to get much. Mary knew that this document was out there. She was holding her breath that nobody would find it. And the fact is that then 2 weeks later, she doesn't mention it. She never mentioned it to anybody. 2 weeks later, William is going through his mother's papers at the apartment and he finds it. So it's not our client that found it. It's not our client trying to benefit herself from this document. William found it, confronted Mary on it, and said, what the heck is with this?
Can we consider any of that in determining whether this falls within the redemption statute?
I think you can consider the fact that Mary absolutely 100% intended this to be inheritance, one way or the other.
And John's intent matters. Is it the donees or the donors?
Well, I think if you're writing this document and you're a devisee under the redemption statute and you fall under that third category where you contemporaneously write a document and you acknowledge that this is in lieu of or it is an offset of or it is an advancement of your legacy, yeah, I think it matters.
Under 30-2350, doesn't Mary have to be a devisee in order for the redemption statute to apply?
If you strictly apply
the plain meaning of the statute.
The plain meaning of the statute as it's written in the section, in the chapter of our statutes as it is right now, it is under the will umbrella.
Yes.
My point to you is that there are numerous other courts around the country and you had made this question in the last oral arguments as to whether all of the cases cited in our brief. Every single one of those cases, every single one of those states that are not Nebraska follow the UTC. And these are states that are applying the redemption statute to trust. Because the trend is that people don't use their wills anymore. to avoid probate, they have a will that says, give everything to my trust, whatever's left over, whatever's not already in there.
Now, in the interim, since I asked opposing counsel the question, I found the definition of devisee in the probate code. And it says, means any person designated in a will to receive a devise, in the case of a devise to an existing trust or trustee or to a trustee or trust described in a will, the trust or trustee is the devisee and the beneficiaries are not devisees. Doesn't that simply blow the argument out of the water? She can't be a devisee under 30-2350 because the definition of devisee would expressly exclude her.
I agree, but that's the quandary that we have here is that
so
that
now
is under the
that's
will.
Why we're going off into sort of the penumbra of the trust code.
Well, and I think other states, any state that has the Uniform Trust Code and the Uniform Probate Code have addressed that same conundrum.
Haven't other states adopted a provision of the trust code, though, that says the rules of construction for trusts and wills we're going to treat as interchangeable?
I think they have.
Has Nebraska adopted that?
Well, they haven't adopted it, but the question is whether or not...
Well, that's kind of the question, right? Is this a decision for us to make or for the legislature?
Well, I mean that's your call. I think it is a decision that you can make, and you can apply this to this, and you can apply the plain meaning of this note to reduce her share, and that's what I think the analysis of Judge Hansen in the county court was, that she applied 30-2350 to say that this was in fact an redemption. And that the clear intent of the parties were that her share would be reduced by that. If it ends up, at the end of the day, ending up at a zero, that's unfortunate, but we don't know the starting point that we came from. And so, I see I'm out of time, but just in conclusion, Your Honors, I would ask you to strongly and urge you strongly to consider applying 30-2350, the redemption statute, to this case, and affirm the county court's ruling that that Mary's share be reduced by the $200,000 that she received. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is State versus Hartzell.